So this is all gonna be joint with Phil saying you. And I don't, all mistakes are mine. all right, so sort of the goal of our project is to try to use type 2B string theory. And like really what I mean is a particular mathematical encoding of. Type 2B string theory in order to describe the category of line operators in topologically twisted three dn equals four Clifford gauge theories. And their estuals. Okay, so let me like try and say a little bit about like in what way I'm going to try. Well, let me say a little bit about 2B string theory, and then I'll try and say in which way that I'm actually gonna like encode it mathematically. So let me just start with some pleasant pictures. So we're going to consider type 2B string theory on R10 with the standard Hanani-Witten setup. So we have, for a lot of you, this is going to be really boring, but there's a few mathematicians in the audience, and I'd like to try and explain like where this stuff is coming from. So these are supposed to be like my 10 coordinates of space, so x0 through x9. And then I want to consider a setup where I have three different kinds of brains. So the first kind are the D3 brains, and they're four-dimensional, so every brain is one higher than the number, dimensional than the number that you see here. And these brains are supposed to be thought of as taking up the first four coordinate directions. And then I'm gonna look at other brains. So these are both six-dimensional, and they're gonna intersect my D3s in three dimensions. Don't worry, Davide, you're not going to learn anything for the first 20 minutes. So you can just go to sleep. Okay. So the D5s are going to take up this space. The NS5s are going to take up these six directions. And then we're going to try and draw pictures where up is going to be directions 4, 5, and 6. Out of the board is going to be directions 7, 8, and 9. And then this direction is going to be the x3 direction. So this is the one, this is the direction in the D3 brains that is not shared by the D5 and the NS5. And then pictorially, we will draw the brains as follows. So D3s, we'll draw them as just lines going horizontally. D5s get drawn as vertical lines because, right, they take up directions 4, 5, and 6, and that's my direction up, as well as that. And then my NS5s, those are supposed to be coming out of the board, so I'll draw them as like axes. Okay, and then we will also consider what are called stacks, not mathematical stacks, of n D3 brains. Which we'll draw like this, but really you're supposed to think of them as being coincident. I just, you know, draw them this way so that I can, so you can see it. All right, and so what I wanna try and do is give like a map, so you can think of brain pictures as just being some sort of like a combinatorial calculus for describing different 3D theories. And I want to try and give like some mathematical sense to the theories that they encode. So the key step that I'm going to use for the mathematical interpretation is that nd3 brains carry, so that's some four, so you should think that they span some four-dimensional space. And these things carry 4D n equals 4 super Yang mils with gauge group UN. And for the mathematicians in the audience, twists of this give rise to the geometric Langlands program. So we can use, so if we just look at the various brain pictures from the perspective of the D3s, we should be able to give them like some interpretation in terms of like the geometric Langlands program. Like, that's kind of the idea. So like there are some primitive brain configurations, which like if I have L D3 brains on one side of a D5 and then R on the other, or you know, I could do the same thing. With an NS5. From the perspective of the D3 brain, like I have some four-dimensional space. On this side I have UL gauge theory, on this side I have UR gauge theory, and then this is gonna give me a wall separating like these two regions of four-dimensional space. And so these things should be interpreted as interfaces. And then if I take like various twists and consider this 4D super Yang mils is living on various different kind, like four manifolds of various particular kinds, then I can use like what Kapustin and Witten already did and like, you know, give like these things like some sort of mathematical interpretation. So that's kind of the idea. And then actually I should say one other key fact. Move this thing up. So move that one down. And I want to move this one up. Rear up. Okay. Hopefully, can you still see that?
Perfect. Do I still have any full supersymmetry on like both sides of the interface?
Yeah. Yep. But then, and I should say though, yeah, so actually here's, I guess, the key thing that I was about to say. So then you can like ask, like how much supersymmetry do you have like actually, like how much supersymmetry are you preserving like actually on the interface? And I guess the key thing is that these things are 3D n equals 4 interfaces. So the amount of supersymmetry that I'm preserving, like on each side, is half, and like that means that if you just look from the perspective of that three-dimensional space, you have a 3D n equals 4 theory, like on the boundary. Okay, so then a closed configuration, so something like this, so this thing now, there is no 4D theory on this side and no 4D theory on this side. If you take the size of X3, so if you take like the X3 coordinate to zero, or the radius in the X3 direction to zero, this thing gives you a full 3D equals 4 theory. So like what I want to do is like I'm interested in studying these topologically twisted 3D n equals 4 theories. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to draw them as various brain configurations. And what these things are going to correspond to is a bunch of interfaces between 4D n equals 4. And if I can give meaning to like these interfaces, then this will give me a meaning of this 3D n equals 4 theory in terms of the local, in terms of the Langlands program. Okay, so. All right, so I said that I wanted to say, do quiver gauge theories. So let me just say that one important class of examples of these configurations is, so if you have a type A quiver your group being GLV, where V is some vector of integers. Sorry, has everybody seen the sort of notation for quivers? Or do I need to say something about what this means? Good. Okay, so if I have some quiver like this, you can turn this thing into brains. Where you draw n NS5 brains, then there will be n minus 1 spaces between them. Then you draw V1, V3 brains between the first two, V2 between the second two, dot, 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 Vn minus 1 between the n minus first and nth. And then you draw D5 brains for the Ws. So in particular, if you have a quiver gauge theory, you can get a brain configuration. So this thing will be enough to like let me make sense of like quiver gauge theory. So this is okay. All right. So now let me like start trying to be a little bit more precise about like what exactly we're trying to do. So in order to do this, I need to now explain like what the twists of the local Langlands program are. If I move.
Justin, can I just ask?
Yeah.
So, I mean, of course, another example that we are very interested in is when that graph closes up to be a cycle.
Yeah, you can do that too. I like it's just hard. Like you just have to consider your X3 direction as being periodic. Mm-hmm. There's a way, we have a way of making sense of that. Like I'm just not going to talk about it.
Okay.
Like it's not very hard. Like you just basically glue in. There's a trivial type interface you can glue in to just glue the two sides together. So what'll happen there is that like I'll get a collect. So what you need to do to make sense of those is you make sense of the what you would get.
You have an NN interface.
Yeah, and then basically like you can take a trace of that, take a trace in order to put it together. But Anyway, it's not hard, but I'm not gonna talk about it. Okay, so now here. Okay. Mid. I was hoping this thing would support some kind of multi-touch, where I could, you know, move multiple boards at the same time.
But it just has permutation buttons.
Yeah,
still have those.
Do they? Well, how does this work?
Oh, I don't know. Last time I used it,
they used to be supposed to be pressing a button in all trees.
Yeah, that's what I would love to. That's what I want to do. I just don't know how to do it.
Not working.
Oh, okay.
At this point, I would just be careful that the top one doesn't fall on your head when you press the buttons.
Fair enough.
Okay. So, all right. So now, let me like try and tell you like what precisely the mathematical definition of an interface is like going to be. So 4D n equals 4 has many twists, but it has two particular twists that I'm going to be interested in, which I'll call the A and the B twists, such that on so that when you reduce on either a curve or a punctured disk, you get the following things. So if I'm doing a curve, then I'm going to be doing the global Langlands program. If I choose a punctured disk, then this is what people call the local Langlands program. Okay, so like in the A twist, if you're on a curve, the thing that you're going to get, you'll get a category out of this 4D n equals 4 theory. And the category is just going to be D modules on BUN. I'm going to complexify the group to GLN, the curve. If you are on the local setting, what you're going to get is sheaves of categories on the space of G bundles on the punctured disk. And this thing is going to be isomorphic to something that people called G of K cat categories, which is cat. So you can look at D modules on the loop group, and you can look at categories with an action of this. So this thing is a group. So using the multiplication, you get a monoidal structure on this category, and you can look at categories with an action for this group. So there's an equivalence between these things.
The G stands for GLN, yeah.
Oh, sorry, the G stands for GLN, of course. Yeah, I should have just done everything with a G, but whatever. I'm only gonna see GLNs in my, from now on, G is always some GLN. Like, I'm gonna accidentally write Gs all the time. So this thing you should think of, so like if you reduce this 4D theory on a curve, you get some 2D B model, and this thing you should think of as the target of the B model. And the target of the B model is actually this BUN GLN C de ROM. So you're taking like quasi-coherent sheaves on that. And then here, if you reduce on a circle, like you're gonna get like a 3D theory. So what you're gonna assign to a point is gonna be a two category instead of a category, and it's sheaves of categories. If you're a physicist, you should roughly think of this. Yes, this is whatever this 4D theory attaches to a circle. So you should think of it as like certainly things that are in here are surface operators. Like every surface operator gives you some object in this category. And then also, though, you could take a boundary condition and compactify it on a circle, and that would also give you something in the same. So this thing contains two interesting classes of objects, surface defects, And it also contains boundary conditions wrapped on a circle. And then similarly, you could do the A twist. And so there, you're also going to get some kind of a B model. And what you're going to get here is some kind of incoherent sheaves on the moduli space of flat connections on your curve. So if you're a physicist, like if you're working in algebraic geometry, the complex structure, whether you choose flat or local systems really matters, and it's flat for this. And then also, you might think you just get a B model, so you'd get some kind of coherent sheaves, but it turns out if you want these things to be the same, you actually have to make some fancier category. And then on this side, you're roughly going to get some kind of sheaves of categories on flat GLN local systems on the punctured disk. And again, like this thing has the same physical interpretation, it's just surface defects are wrapped boundary conditions like in the other twist. Maybe this space is actually like not so hard to actually write down. So to give a connection, right, you just need to give some one form on the disk, and then you just need to mod out by gauge. So this thing is just some, so this is just some big stack like this. For like the physicists in the audience, it's important that that you're here, that I'm working algebraically and not analytically. Like I don't want to be able to like gauge away all of like my irregular connections. Okay, so that's like what, okay, so this thing is like what you get from the 4D n equals 4 theory when you reduce it on either a curve or on a disk. And then each of these things is supposed to be an interface between different these different things. So that's just functors between these categories. So what I am really trying to do is to each of these primitive brain pictures, that one and that one, I just need to write down a particular functor between the local Langlands categories. And then if I want to know like how to make sense of a brain picture, well, that's just going to be a composition of a bunch of these functors. And if there's no brains on, you know, the very leftmost and on the very rightmost, then like then the, if I were on the punctured disk, what I would get is something, a functor from DG categories to DG categories. And if I look where vect goes, that is a DG category, and that thing would be the category of lines. The composition of these functors would be the category of lines in the 3D theory. But then, like one can try. Okay. Well, anyway, so that's what we're trying to do. So this is the name of the game, and then I guess I've burned 25 minutes on this. So what I've tried to do in the past is I've actually tried to describe like how this entire procedure works, and then I've just ended up like making everyone very unhappy when like I babble really fast for like a long period of time, and then no one learns anything. So what I'm going to try and do instead is I'm just going to tell you about two configurations, and I'm just going to tell you what happens in that those two particular cases, and then hopefully you'll get some kind of an idea of like what sort of thing is going on. And I'll even this time pick a case where you'll even learn something new about the local Langlands program, like see a new object in the local Langlands program that probably Dennis knew about, but like it's never appeared in any paper. So I get to pretend that I thought of it first, but it's not true. He probably already knows. Oh, wait. Yeah.
In the upper right entry of your little table there, chooses categories. Yeah. Like
yes, I do. Yeah. Yeah. So what these things, you ought to think of them, so just like a D module is like a sheaf with a flat connection, this thing is supposed to be like a category with a flat connection. All right. And the rear I don't know what I've done anymore. I'm just going to write wherever I want. Everything's going to the wind. I'm going to write anywhere I want.
Actually, before you go on, this might be a dumb question, but if I remember correctly, and this might be the part that's dumb, there's like a CP1 worth of twists of
sure.
A n equals 4.
Yep.
That wasn't the wrong fact, which is good. What the, what do these A and B twists correspond to? Like what points on that?
Zero and infinity.
Okay. So the hard ones.
Zero, infinity, I think. Infinity, zero.
One, zero is off infinity. So it'll be the same place just in corpus quadrupedum.
I see. One and infinity. I see. Yeah, see, so I don't know either.
Sorry, I was thinking about something else, zero infinity, of course.
Wait, sorry?
Zero infinity, sorry, I was thinking about another CP1, I'm silly, sorry.
Right. So maybe, okay, zero and infinity. Yeah, so anyway, so it's the points, zero and infinity.
Because this one is not a twister CP1.
Yeah. And then I should say something else. So a lot of these configurations don't exist with the other twists, or you have to deform. Which is something that confused me for like a really, really long time. Right, right, Davide? You don't think that BBB nom deforms?
Oh, I agree with the statement. I don't know if I should agree with this, but you're confused about it.
Okay, I was confused about it for a long time. Okay, so I'm gonna just try and make sense of two different things. So one is I just wanna make sense of this guy or this guy. And I guess I should have said that the Langlands equivalence. Actually, let me say one other thing before I do this. So S duality, which mathematically corresponds to the Langlands correspondence, it swaps. This guy, or you know, no matter how many things I had on the side of it, and this guy. So we are going to examine this guy and this guy. And okay, so by looking at the two twists, we're gonna get from this, I'm gonna get an object inside of sheaves of categories on Bun GLN with a punctured disk. Actually, let me maybe just to match what I was doing before, let me do it like on this side. Sorry. So this thing would, wait. I want to do it this way. It's not really that important. The two things would just be dual to one another. But so this thing would be a functor from backed into my local Langlands categories. That's the same thing as giving me an object. That's why I wanted it empty on this side. I'm bringing things left to right. So I'm either going to get an object inside of sheaves of categories on Bun GLN Durham, or I'm going to get a sheaf of categories over flat GLN, the punctured disk. So this would just be by looking at the A twist or the B twist. And then similarly, I could do the same here. So what's gonna happen is for each of these, I'm gonna get two objects. So I'll have four objects total, but then after applying but because these two things are exchanged by S duality, the A type object here will get swapped with the B type object here and vice versa. Okay, so this is all I will try and explain. Okay, any questions? Okay, so now I want to bring down front and put up the mid. All right. So when one wants to like actually like try and do these things, one can try and do a kind of semi-classical analysis, where like instead of getting things about categories, like I'm just going to get some statement about symplectic shifted symplectic varieties or shifted symplectic stacks and some Lagrangians in there. And so let me first like try and tell you like what the shifted symplectic analysis, or sorry, what the semi-classical analysis would say in this case. Although I won't tell you how I actually do the semi-classical analysis because it's not, I'm more interested in explaining the other part of the thing today, how I go from the semi-classical to the quantum. Okay, so let's do this guy. So in the A twist, I claim that what you get is T star 2, Bun GLN Durham, one is just going to find a conormal. So this thing is like, and you're just going to find the conormal to Bun GLN itself, which of course is just the inclusion of the zero. So I guess maybe I'll just write it that way. Okay, so that's not very complicated. And then the B twist, we're gonna find like basically the exact same geometry. So we're just gonna find flat GLN in the punctured disk, including in T star 2 of flat. I'm not going to say how I do this. So one thing that Phil and I have been trying to work on is like sort of a good theory of what it means to do geometric quantization on a shifted symplectic stack. Roughly like the ansatz for like how this sort of thing is supposed to work is that if you have an n shifted symplectic stack, you should get, when you do geometric quantization, you should get an n category. When you have a Lagrangian, you should get an object in said n category. And then by analogy with the ordinary zero-shifted geometric quantization, if you were trying to geometrically quantize a cotangent, like an ordinary cotangent bundle, usually like what you would say is you would get some kind of functions on the base, like when you want to try and quantize a zero-shifted symplectic, like an ordinary zero-shifted symplectic cotangent bundle. And then like when one does the global geometric Langlands program, one will end up seeing one shifted cotangent bundles. And sort of the ansatz that like one would have there is that one should try and look at quasi-coherent sheaves on the base as opposed to functions on the base. And then if you have a two shifted cotangent bundle, then you should do sheaves of categories on the base. And that's sort of how you get like these categories that I wrote down up here. And then now the question is like, how do you end up like doing Lagrangians? Well, fortunately, like when you have a conormal, like these things are, like that's like a very like easy setting. And like what you'd expect to have is if you have the conormal to X and Y, you just expect to like push forward the structure, whatever the structure sheaf of X is into Y. So here, like the thing that we would expect to get is inside of sheaves of categories. So sorry, this is the really boring one, by the way. So inside sheaves of categories on Bun G Durham, like the thing that you would expect to get out of the zero section is basically whatever the structure sheaf is. And so the structure sheaf of this would just be quasi-coherent sheaves on Bun G Durham as a sheaf of categories over Bun G Durham. So I will just call this thing like the two structure sheaf of G L N. Okay. And similarly here, you just get the two structure sheaf of flat G L N inside sheaves of categories on flat G L N. Okay, so this one is like very easy. The problem, the thing that we're gonna see is that the other one I'm gonna do is ridiculously hard, and that will take up the entire rest of the talk. In fact, even if I can do it in the rest of the talk. But for those of you who like know something about like the global geometric Langlands program, like the analogous situation here would be like asking if I had the structure sheaf of Bun, the structure sheaf of Bun GLN as a D module, and I wanted to know like what its Langlands dual is. Could ask like what that object actually is in incoherent sheaves on flat GLN, and like if you've ever looked at like the local Langlands correspondence, so QCO sort of. Sits inside of these incoherent sheaves as the things with zero singular support. So those are the objects that like people are like used to and the objects that are sort of like easy to construct. And like what you actually find is that like as a quasi-coherent sheaf, this thing is just supported at like basically the trivial flat connection. And then everything interesting about it, and like so if you projected to just the quasi-coherent sheaves, you wouldn't get anything at all. And everything interesting about it is entirely in the difference between INCO and INCO and QCO. So that like sort of tells you that this is gonna be like a horrendous object to describe because it's like something that's like purely gonna be of a derived nature. Like it won't have like any like reasonable like description. It's gonna be like really awful, but like we're gonna actually find a reasonable way to talk about it. Okay, so let me go ahead and do the semi-classical analysis on the other side, because that at least is possible to do. Okay, so let's do the semi-classical analysis for this guy. And the A twist, it actually won't end up being hard. So what this thing is gonna end up being is inside of Bun G, this thing is gonna end up being the following. Actually, let me just write some. So I'm going to take the conormal of some map. And the conormal that I'm going to take is going to look something like it's almost Bun U of C de Rom, where U is the unipotent radical. So just the upper triangular matrices.
You mean of the punctured disk out of C?
Sorry, of the punctured disk. But that's not quite gonna be it. So what I'm actually gonna take is something that I'll call Bun U twisted, I don't have to worry about this. It will actually just be Bun U. If I were in the global setting, what would have happened is I would have needed to add a twist by some square root of the canonical bundle of C, but the punctured disk is flat. So it's trivial, so I don't have to worry about this extra twist. So the thing that like I would end up having to do is this, but this would be like the naive answer, but this isn't quite right. But this space actually has a certain minus one shifted, so has a certain function on it. And what I'm actually going to find is something like the conormal bundle twisted by this function. So I can explain what the function is, like if you're interested, but like it's not actually so. Basically, from so the data that like goes into labeling this thing is an SL2 tuple in GLN. And from inside of the Lie algebra of SLN, you know, you can pick out like one of E, F, or G, and I claim that from F, I'll be able to build some function.
Sure.
Okay.
Sorry, but the twisted conormal? Right,
yeah, so it's a twisted conormal. So what I mean by a twisted conormal, maybe first let me say what I mean by a twisted zero section, and then I'll explain like what I mean by twisted conormal. So a twisted zero section would just be like the graph of a one form.
Okay.
Or sorry, in this case, it'd be the graph of a two shifted one form.
Okay.
And then for a twisted conormal, you just push. If I have a one form here, I can twist I can shift the conormal by that one form.
It's like an affine.
So yes, like if I have like x including into y,
yep.
Then I can describe the conormal. You can take g star, the cotangent bundle of y. This thing has a, and if I want to make the conormal, what you do is you take the zero section.
Okay.
Like as a Lagrangian, and then you just compose these Lagrangian correspondences,
okay.
And what you'll get here is the conormal to x and y. And then if I just replace this thing by the graph of some one form on x, then I will get the twisted, like the f twisted or the df twisted.
Okay, cool.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, so actually, I guess I should say I twisted it by df. Okay, so this thing like actually ends up being like not so difficult to do or to quantize. And one gets something that's like very familiar in like the geometric Langlands program. So I'm going to try and describe it as a category with an action of D modules on. I'm not spending so much time on this one because this is the one that's easy. So I need to describe some action of. So I said that this thing is the same thing as categories with some action of D modules on the loop group. So I need to give you some category that has an action. And I claim that what this thing ends up being is Whitaker D modules so this function f ends up giving you a character for this loop for this thing, and this thing just ends up being like Whitaker D modules for this. The point is if I hadn't have had this f, I just would have got the honest invariants. And when you like, deform, like it just like you just take some sort of twisted invariants, like when you work out what happens to this thing. Okay. Anyway, this is not the guy that I want to spend a bunch of time describing, but I want to say that it looks something like this. But this is something that's very familiar to everybody who does local Langlands. And so they wouldn't be surprised. So I want to go to the more interesting guy. Okay, so let's try and look at the other one. Oh, and actually, I guess we can check one other thing. It's well known that under the local Langlands correspondence, the structure sheaf here ends up getting swapped with these Whitaker, these Whitaker D modules. Let me do the other. How much time do I have? 10 minutes?
Depends how late you care about being for the postdoc orientation.
I would pretend I would prefer to not be late. You also have to go to it, right?
Okay.
Yeah, so you would also probably prefer not to be late.
Yeah, not to be too late.
Yeah, okay. All right, so let's do the other guy. So I claim that the semi-classical, in the B twist, I claim that the semi-classical analysis actually almost ends up looking exactly the same. So you end up getting flat U on the punctured disk, including into flat G of the punctured disk. And then the thing that stops being true is I almost would have said that you take some sort of twisted conormal, like in exactly the same sort of way. But this actually ends up being false. So this thing is false unless you collapse the Z mod 2Z grading of your, which is equivalent to like adding a invertible parameter of degree 2 to like all of your chain complexes. So like basically you just take all of these schemes and then add some parameter UU inverse to all of their structure sheaves, where this thing has degree 2, this thing has degree minus 2. And now, once like you make this sort of a change, then it really is, then it really does become a two-shifted conormal bundle. Basically, like what happens is that you'll find that you are trying to deform this. So what ends up happening is that this thing ends up being a one form of degree 0. Not of degree 2. So like whereas here, I think I should have been a little bit more careful. Yeah, it turns out that like when you work out the way the Drum complex was, like it actually ends up in the right degree to twist you, but here it didn't. And so this ends up being like the whole problem. It's like you've got this twisted conormal bundle, but like you need to twist by like something that's in like the wrong homological degree. But this is actually kind of like an old problem. Also, like in particular, this one form is actually exact. It's like D of something. But this is sort of like an old problem. So if you have like some category C, then basically deformations of like QCO of X, these things live in the second Hochschild homology of X, or Hochschild cohomology of X. But if you add a parameter, you know, an invertible parameter U, you can twist by things in HH0, or sorry, you can deform by things in HH0 of X, which in particular includes the functions on X. And like the answer to this is actually matrix factorizations. So like if you had like a function here, you would be able like you can actually deform the category of coherent sheaves to like the category of matrix factorizations on X with your superpotential F. And so what ends up actually happening, like in this case, is that there is a particular function that you can write down. Again, it's built from this F in SLN. And what you can do is you could take the category of matrix factorizations for this potential, and then push it forward along this map. And I claim that that is like the right thing to be dual to the structure sheaf on the other side.
So are you gonna pick things which are graded or segregated?
So it turns out that in this particular case, there will be an extra C star action around that I can use to shift the grading back. So it's also true that like if this function, if there was a C star action on X, and this function had the appropriate weight for that weight one for that C star, then like normally these matrix factorizations is basically some category that's linear over this invertible degree two parameter. So like basically the homological grade, and that's the same thing as a Z2 graded category. But if you have this extra C star action, you can take the GM invariance, and this thing will be a Z graded category. So it turns out that like there is such a C star around so that I can actually push forward the, so that you can actually like push forward the equivariant matrix factorizations. And that Z grading gets mixed. The Z grading coming from the C star is what gets mixed up into the, like becomes the cohomological grading.
And is the C star action funny, or is it just the one that comes from the punctured disk?
It's not the one from the punctured disk. It comes actually from one, it's a little hard to describe.
Is H, right?
Oh, yeah, sorry. So yeah, it's the action by H. Yeah, sure, yeah. So inside of here I have H. And yeah, it's the action by H. Yeah, sorry, yes.
Kajdan grading.
Yeah, it's the Kajdan grading. Okay, and then so now like the key thing that I've been working on, that I like have been working on for like the last day, but like that I didn't have enough time to like write up properly, is like what you'd like to say is if you take the HOMs from this category to itself, so you want to do the HOMs from this matrix factorization category to itself, this thing should be the same thing as quasi-coherent sheaves on the two-shifted tangent bundle of G double Whitaker reduced by U. But this actually is like difficult to say, because like in this description, actually this parameter lives, it's not possible to do Whitaker reduction of the two-shifted cotangent bundle, because this is not a C star, or this thing is not great, like the grading won't work out. So what I've been doing is I've actually found a different formulation of this category in terms. So it turns out that the sheaves of categories on bun U, or sorry, on flat U of the punctured disk, this thing is actually the same thing as categories with an action of indco of T minus one of U. Where here I'm using the convolution product coming from the fact that U is a group.
But which object has that as a nomorphisms?
Dirichlet. So yeah, this thing has a Dirichlet presentation.
To the DigiCat.
Yeah, that's right. But the hard part is that in the other setting, it was very easy to describe what Whitaker equivariant meant.
Yes.
And here, like you have to do tons of like crazy Z2 twists in order to describe, like basically like what Whitaker equivariant means is like something that's like really horrendous.
Why didn't people use this description
I think that like basically I talked to Sam like once several years ago, and he told me that he didn't believe that this could possibly be true.
That's what I have too.
Yeah, and then like basically then though like I like kept like pushing on it and actually just proved that it was true. So, I mean, it only works here. It only works if the group is unipotent. It has no chance of working in any other setting, but in fact, it's good enough.
I see.
Yeah, so it's for U, it's not for G. So basically for G, like it's nothing, like this category isn't even close to the right thing. But for U, it actually turns out to be the same if you introduce some grading, which like the H grading, like if you use the H grading, then you can like make graded versions of these categories that are really the same. And then you can describe sort of like what's the analog of vector spaces. So on this side, in order to take the Whitaker invariance, you had to describe an action of d modules on g of k on vect that was twisted by like an exponential, a certain exponential d module. And here you can make sense of sort of like that same, some action of this inco category on vect, which is twisted by something which I'll call like the spectral exponential. And like that spectral exponential like is like the thing that was like so hard to describe. But once like you write that down properly, like it's just Homs out of that. Anyway, I can talk about it more. It's like pretty, yeah. And also like I literally only figured this out a few hours ago. So it's not quite like boiled to the point where I could tell you easily. But so I knew this description for a while, this one about the matrix factorizations. But then this thing about the spectral version of the exponential D module was something I sort of had only just figured out.
All right, we look forward to hearing more in future days, weeks,
yeah,
months.
Well, hopefully day.